One of the most profound stories we heard this year was about the Iraqi parents in a little town outside Mosul whose teenage son had run away to join ISIS. We listened, as they listened for the first time, to a recording of him on Iraqi TV, lying on the ground, seriously wounded. It's him, she says. Right after that video, he was handed over to Navy SEAL medics. Soon after that, he was stabbed and died. That recording may be his last words. And his death would become the center of the war crimes trial of Navy SEAL Eddie Gallagher, who was charged with premeditated murder in the stabbing, cleared in court when another SEAL claimed responsibility. And then Gallagher was supported and eventually granted clemency for a lesser charge by President Trump. But through all of this, no one notified the boy's parents until NPR's Jane Arraf tracked them down. Jane Arraf has been reporting from the Middle East for NPR since 2016. Next month, she starts a new job as the New York Times Baghdad bureau chief. And today she opens her reporter's notebook for us. And Jane, start with that high-profile trial. What questions did you have?
So my questions really were, you know, we've heard so much about Eddie Gallagher, the Navy SEAL who was accused, but we heard hardly anything, not even the name of that wounded ISIS fighter, a teenager who was lying there interviewed by Iraqi TV and then ended up dead in the hands of the Navy SEALs.
And so you and a producer did what? Like try to track him down? You didn't have a name.
I was working with our fixer, Sangar Khalil, and he managed to find who the fighter was. There was no body. His body was left there and then dumped in a mass grave. We can't know 100% for sure that this is his identity, but the family was convinced that that was their son.
And what was his name?
His name was Khalid Jamal Abdullah, and the name he took on was Ahmed from Shura. Shura was the village near Mosul that he came from.
Right, where you tracked down his family. And where in our mind's eye he suddenly gets reduced to this teenager, you know, disobeying his father who didn't want him to go off. He joined ISIS. They paid him $50 a month. And then he came back and told his parents that, in fact, he couldn't quit because they'd kill him. And his parents told you what? This had kind of destroyed them.
Yeah, you know, when he was interviewed by the Iraqi television reporter, this teenager who was lying there wounded with his leg bandaged, and he said, "Why did you join ISIS?" And the boy said, "I joined because they told me Afya." Afya is a word that means good job, you know? And he also said, "My father beat me to keep me from joining." So we went to the father who was working in a shop behind the counter. And he looked at the video and he was almost expressionless, except at the point where the boy said, "My father beat me to keep me from joining," you could see a tear rolling down his face. The father actually tried physically to go to get him back and was told by ISIS that once you join ISIS, you don't unjoin. The father seemed to have done everything he could to keep this from happening. And he actually said to his son, "You will destroy us. You will destroy this family."
You know, I'm hearing so much legwork, but I'm also hearing how much of a story there is behind a story, which is the work that you do. I mean, I'm thinking of another story. ISIS attacked the minority Yazidi in Iraq. You met a mother who believes her husband and son were killed. She saw her 13-year-old daughter assaulted right in front of her. And a 4-year-old daughter was ripped from her arms. Terrible. This mother made her way to Canada. And then you met up with her when she came back to an orphanage in Mosul in Iraq because the thinking was that a now 10-year-old girl might have been that 4-year-old ripped away from her. We're waiting on a DNA test.
I mean, this story is extraordinary. It's the kind of thing that you could make a movie of, right? But the thing to remember and the thing that's so astounding is almost everyone has a story like this. This is a very small and ancient ethnic minority that ISIS declared genocide against. There's almost no family that lived in Sinjar that has not been affected by this. But she's facing all of this by coming back. And there's just this incredible understated bravery. And part of the poignancy of this to me was she had her two sons with her. They're 6 and 8 year old. They've been in Canada for 3 years. They speak English really well. They kind of understood why they were there, but not really. And just the gap between these kids who are rapidly becoming Canadian and their mother, and they don't even share really a language they're all fluent in anymore, was just so huge.
Jana Reff, what does this say to you? Because, you know, these stories are riveting, but many Americans are looking in another direction, at other movies, you know? We're not as focused at all on this region. We remember the U.S. invaded Afghanistan in 2001 to avenge the Saudi Osama bin Laden's attack on 9/11. Iraq was attacked in 2003 based on faulty intelligence. And here we are. What is it you would want Americans to know that you're seeing that maybe we're not about this region?
All of us who cover the region and all of us who cover Iraq in particular share that worry that Americans aren't invested anymore in Iraq. It was 17 years ago that the U.S. invaded Iraq, and there's an entire generation in Iraq, as well as obviously in the United States, that doesn't remember any of it. But after that, you know, as the country slid into civil war and then further sectarian fighting, and then there was Al-Qaeda and then there was ISIS, Iraqis who used to blame the U.S. for pretty much everything started blaming their own leaders. So I would hope that Americans don't stop paying attention to Iraq and what's happening there. But Iraq has kind of moved on a lot since 2003.
No. What about the broader region? You're speaking with us from Cairo. Everyone remembers the promise of the Arab Spring in 2011. It was not fulfilled. We're also coming off a year in which the Trump administration forged agreements, historic agreements, between Israel and the United Arab Emirates. What are you looking at?
Well, part of it is near term. Part of it is how does a Biden administration affect things in Saudi Arabia, for instance, which under the Trump administration has been incredibly cozy with that country, even after the killing and dismemberment of Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi. I'll be looking at whether the relationship cools with Egypt, which gets a lot of U.S. aid and military assistance and has pretty much been given a pass on what's been an escalating crackdown on human rights. But, you know, the question of Iraq has really always been, will this country hold together? Will it remain stable? But now the question is more, can it fulfill the incredible potential it has? You know, the young people, the talent, the oil reserves it has, all of the things that have so far not contributed to a country that is stable and successful.
Jana Reff, before coming to NPR, you had 2 decades of reporting from this region, CNN, NBC, the Christian Science Monitor, PBS NewsHour. You were at one point the only Western journalist in Baghdad covering the war in Iraq and covering live battles in Fallujah. I mean, just incredible work. Also in India, Pakistan, Haiti, Bosnia. You'd be forgiven if at this point you said, you know, I think I'm going to go to an island with you know, beach umbrellas. You're staying for the New York Times in the region. Why? What's the draw?
You know, the draw first was I wanted to see what happened. You know, that curiosity we all have as journalists. How is this going to end? Right. I had felt I didn't want to leave Iraq when things were bad. That's not something that I think one should do. And now I can't really quite decide what I think will happen in Iraq, but what I know is that I want to be there to cover it and to do stories of these people who otherwise would die nameless, or these incredible courageous women who come back to try to put pieces of their family together. They keep trying, and I think the least that we can do as journalists is to cover them.
Well, Jana Reff, we should also mention you have such a distinctive voice, always measured, always bringing dignity to whatever you're seeing. And we hope to hear your voice on Here and Now for years to come. NPR's Jana Reff, soon to be the New York Times Jana Reff, the new Baghdad bureau chief. Jane, thanks so much.
Thank you, Robin. Thank you.